in the fourth inning.
Just your normal opening day for the Kansas City Royals, something the Royals and Rangers yesterday did that no team or teams had ever done on opening day since 1929. The Royals won 14-10, club record for runs scored on opening day. The teams combined for 24 runs, 30 hits, 13 walks, 3 hit by pitch. Last time both teams scored 5 runs in any inning of an opening day was 1929. We're not talking the first inning, which is what happened yesterday. Rangers scored 5, the Royals scored 5 in the bottom of the first. The first inning took 50 minutes to play. 50 minutes to play, and the game took a very long time as well. Longest 9-inning game in Royals baseball history, and the Royals didn't even bat in the bottom of the ninth. And it was like good old times. Greg Holland pitching out of the bullpen. Wade Davis gets the save. And the Royals outlast the Rangers 14-10. And most runs ever on opening day for the Royals. Longest 9-inning game in Royals history. And really, it was 8.5 innings. Whit Merrifield, Jorge Soler, as you heard, with the homer to tie it at 8 apiece. Michael Taylor with a couple outfield assists. And he hit a home run as well. And what a start for him as a new Royal in center field. Kyle Isbell, rookie, with 3 hits and 5 at-bats. Whit Merrifield had 3 hits. And, of course, there was the old Wade Davis coming in to close it. And the Royals are 1-0, and I don't think it's too early to say this team's going undefeated. I don't think it's too early to say it. I mean, you score 14 runs, you should win every game.
Like that every game they are.
I think if the Royals score 14 runs every game for the rest of the season, I feel confident that they will go undefeated. There might be a 15-14 loss somewhere there, I guess. It's possible. But pretty crazy what the Royals did yesterday. You know, Brad Keller was bad, but the good thing is the Rangers starting pitcher was worse. So there was always that.
I kind of had it in the back of my mind, like, Gibson's not, like, necessarily been pitching real well of in the last couple years. So, and it's like, maybe the Royals can overcome this. They did.
Witt 3-for-5. Benintendi got on base multiple times, as did Carlos Santana. Not the musician, but the baseball player. Soler was 2-for-2 with the homer, as we mentioned. There's a lot. Nicky Lopez playing short because Mondesi is out hurt. Lopez 2-for-4, and he's been struggling at the plate in spring training. And the Royals get it done. They used a lot of pitchers. Brad Keller goes 1 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, no Ks. Kyle Zimmer, then Carlos Hernandez, who got the win. Jesse Hahn, Scott Barlow, Greg Holland all held down the fort. And then Davis in for the save. So the Royals used 7 pitchers to get through the first game of the year. Good news is that they get today off, as they will play again on Saturday tomorrow. More on that in a little bit. Here's Mike Matheny on the Wild home opener.
Best opening day I've ever been a part of. To watch how those guys responded right away, and then to keep coming, go down again, it was a beautiful thing to watch. You know what? I know a lot said about not putting a whole lot of faith in what happens in spring training, but I think stuff like that happens because of some of the positive things we saw and the way this group started to believe in themselves through spring training. And this is one we won't forget.
So there, that home run you heard was 435 feet. Some people believe it was more than that. It doesn't matter. He crushed it. That's the bottom line. And Mike Minor, the former Ranger, who was a former Royal when he was with the Rangers, now he's the current Royal versus former Rangers. Mike Minor, the Royals acquired as a free agent during the offseason. He will start tomorrow at 1:10 at the K against the Rangers. So the Royals off to a nice start. Other games of Major League Baseball yesterday, opening day. The Blue Jays beat the Yankees 3-2 in 10 innings. Tigers over the Indians 3-2. It was the Brewers over the Twins 6-5 in 10 innings. The Pirates knocked out the Cubs 5-3. Also in 10 innings, the Phillies over the Braves 3-2. Rockies beat the Dodgers. The World Series champions lose their opener 8-5. And San Diego, remember the Padres spent a lot of money this offseason and improved their starting pitching. They beat the D-backs 8-7. Cardinals 11, Reds 6. Of course, the Royals over the Rangers 14-10. The Rays shut out the Marlins 1-0. The Angels over the White Sox 4-3. Astros get by the A's 8-1. Mariners squeak by in 10 innings over the Giants 8-7. The Orioles and Red Sox postponed due to weather, and the Mets Nationals game was postponed due to COVID-19 as a positive test for the National baseball team. So that's a wrap of the opening day of Major League Baseball as the Royals do get the win. And you know, seeing Kyle Isbell get 3 hits was nice to see. Nicky Lopez with a couple of hits. Witt hitting a home run, and, you know, 2-hit Witt after 2 at-bats. We could say that yesterday. Mm-hmm. Soler not striking out, hitting the home run. And then the bullpen did its job after Brad Keller didn't. So really the only negative you can take out yesterday, I think, is that Keller didn't pitch well. But he'll figure it out. I'm not overly worried about that.
No, his sister doesn't tell you to be too worried about what he's doing. Now, if it becomes a normal thing, then yeah, you start worrying. But no, sure. I'm not worried about Brad Keller at this point.
Wouldn't think so. So interesting day in Major League Baseball to start the season. And there were fans. The Royals had about 9,100 fans. So they were going, I forgot the percentage. What was it? 25%. So technically it wasn't 10,000. Because Cobham Stadium used to hold 40,000. Then they reconfigured some things. Yeah. They put in some suites. They put in the Craft and Draft, which I would like to sit down and enjoy that sometime. And so they actually, their capacity is under 40,000. So 91-something was what they had. And Patrick Mahomes and his wife and baby were at the game. First family picture that was released, in case you care about that. And, of course, part owner, Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Royals. I got to remember that. So fun day for the Royals fans and the boys in blue. All right, local sports, Dusty. We had stuff from yesterday, baseball and track and field.
Yeah, quite a bit of action yesterday. All the results for all of this, by the way, can be found at ncksports.com. Bullet track and field team opened their season at the Buff Invitational in Belleville. The Trojan boys brought home 6 medals, 1 gold, 2 silver, and 3 bronze. Their gold medal winner was Grady Seifert in the shot put with a throw of 48 inches. On the girls' side, Lady Trojans brought home a total of 22 medals, 6 gold, 4 silver, 12 bronze. Gold medalist for Beloit, Hallie Budke, in the high jump at 4 feet 10 inches and the 100-meter dash at 14:21. J.C. Carter in the shot put with a throw of 34-1. She also won the discus at 100 feet 8 inches. And Jenna Baluch won the 3,200-meter run at 14:40. Ali Schrader in the triple jump with a leap of 31 feet 8 inches. So those are the gold medal winners for Blood. Also, Osborne competing at the Lacrosse Invitational and had a good showing there with gold medals on the boys' side. The boys' team finished in second place. Individually, Justin Widler won the high jump gold with a jump of 5 feet 8 inches. Also, Mason Scher won a couple individual golds in a 100-meter dash for Osborne at 11:85 and took the 223.81. Reagan Bales winning the 800-meter run for Osborne 207.29 and then took first place as well in the 1600-meter run with a time of 4:52.65. Osborne's 4x1 team won in 46:26, and the 4x4 with a time of 3:47.18, finishing first for Osborne as well. Again, all the results for those for those track and field meets can be found at ncksports.com. Baseball yesterday, the Beloit Trojans swept in their first NCAA league doubleheader against Ellsworth. They lost game 1, 8-5, and then fell in game 2, 15-0 in 4 innings. And also Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball team fell to 1-3 on the season. They got swept by Southeast Saline there in Rural Gypsum. Trojans won game 1, 15-0 in 3 innings. Took the second game 17-2 in 4. And again, all the scores from high school baseball and softball in the area are posted as well at ncksports.com. So that's a look at what happened locally yesterday. Today, it's Good Friday.
So. Good Friday, that's right. Final Four gets started tonight on ESPN, the women's Final Four at 5 o'clock at Stanford, a 1 seed against South Carolina, 1 seed, and at 8:30 on ESPN tonight, number 1 seed UConn versus number 3 seed Arizona. The women's championship will be Sunday evening at 5 o'clock. Obviously, I'm going to take UConn to beat Arizona. Who you got, Stanford or South Carolina?
I'm going to go with Stanford.
Okay, I'll go with South Carolina. South Carolina, UConn, or Stanford against UConn, and we're giving Arizona no chance, basically, which is probably correct.
I'm hoping Arizona wins the whole thing.
Sure.
This is the first time they've ever been there. Let's mix it up, right?
Yeah, I just like to beat UConn. Let's do that first. I'm okay with that. Of course, the men's Final Four is taking place tomorrow in Indianapolis, as it will be 1-seed Baylor versus 2-seed Houston at 4:14, and at 7:34 tomorrow, it'll be Gonzaga, 14-point favorite of UCLA, who is an 11 seed. And it's going to be interesting to see these games tomorrow night. I don't know if Houston has enough firepower offensively to hang with Baylor. Houston's good defensively. Sometimes their offensive is challenged. Baylor is playing better all the way around here in the tournament. And I have to pick Baylor in this one, although I won't be upset if Houston wins, but I really would love to see, I think like everybody else in the country, Baylor versus Gonzaga in the national championship, as Brian Heaney talked about yesterday. The voice of the Jayhawks, if you missed that interview, is posted at our website, katiecountry94.com, the podcast page, the sports ticket, and you can listen to it. So that's what people want to see. Baylor and Gonzaga are supposed to play in Indianapolis earlier in the year, and then it got canceled due to COVID-19. So we'd love to see it. And how many times do you want to see a matchup and it doesn't happen? I tell you what, I look at these matchups and I don't see Baylor beating, I don't see Houston beating Baylor, and I don't see UCLA beating Gonzaga. And the reason I don't see Houston or UCLA winning is because I don't think they each have enough firepower. Mm-hmm. And yet, I just know history tells you that typically that matchup you just salivate over and drool over and crave just rarely happens. Mm-hmm. It rarely happens. Maybe we will get it this year. I'm going to predict we're going to get it this year because I cannot pick Houston against Baylor.
You just try to figure, like, nah, I can't do it.
It sounds weird, but I sound more confident. I feel more confident Baylor's going to be Houston, even though I feel really confident they're both going to win, mm-hmm. which always scares me. Baylor's a 5-point favorite. Gonzaga is a 14-point favorite. And I don't like seeing those big, huge favorite type of things either, especially in basketball. Now, football, Alabama, favored by 17, against their, Notre Dame. I can see those. But basketball, one guy gets hot, one guy tweaks an ankle, one guy gets in foul trouble.
Foul trouble doesn't exist in football,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Injuries do, but
foul trouble doesn't. And the other thing in football is unless you lose your quarterback, and even then for Alabama, they just threw in Tua when Jalen Hurts was struggling. I mean, if you lose your quarterback, could change the whole game. But if you lose the really, really good teams, I mean, we know Alabama's, the class by itself along with Clemson, those teams, they lose a key guy on the line. They lose a guy in defense. They lose a running back. They lose a receiver. It doesn't really change things too much in that particular game.
Yeah.
Now, a quarterback, it's possible. In basketball, you only got 5-on-5. It ain't 11-on-11. So, if Kispert goes down with a turned ankle early minutes tomorrow night, if Davion Mitchell gets, early foul trouble as he did the last game, I mean, that can change things quite a bit. There's no doubt. Quentin Grimes goes out and hits 5 threes in the first half. Somebody goes out and pulls a Jerry McNamara from 2003, hits 6 threes in the first half against Kansas in the 03 title game. I mean, things like this can happen. Mm-hmm. Ju Zhang has had an unbelievable tournament, the top scorer for UCLA. Maybe he goes nuts. I think the only way Houston and UCLA win these games is, one, they're going to have to keep the games probably in the 50s and 60s in order to negate having to have all that offensive firepower. And I think they're going to need Baylor and Gonzaga to play, honestly, well below their A game.
It's almost C game, right?
I think so. I was thinking B minus C plus game. Yeah, I think if Baylor plays their B or B plus game, they win. I think Gonzaga plays their B game, they win. But there's always that chance that you have a night where you can't make anything. You can't. And I've said it before. You look great, and then all of a sudden the next game, Gonzaga looked unbelievable against USC. And, USC looked great against Kansas, Oregon, and we saw what happened to USC. Of course, they're going up against Gonzaga. And Gonzaga had a great game last time out. They could easily be ice cold and get behind, and I'm going to tell you something. This is the biggest thing. For Houston, UCLA to really have a great chance of winning tomorrow night, they're going to, of course, going to have to play defense. They're going to have to slow the game down, and they're going to have to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
If they get out, if Houston jumps out, I mean, even if it's tight, like if it just stays even Steven, like Baylor's up 2 or 4, Houston comes back to where it's, if Houston's down 4 at halftime, I wouldn't be freaking out about it. UCLA's down 4 at halftime, I wouldn't freak out about it. But we're talking the home run shot. We're talking the knockout punch. UCLA and Houston can't have what happened to Arkansas down by 18 to Baylor in the first half. And Arkansas came back and made it close, but it was still too much to overcome. Mm-hmm. And UCLA can't afford to be down big like USC was early in the game against Gonzaga.
Yeah, it's a wrap.
Yeah, 19-4, it's a wrap. So that's the thing. Houston, UCLA got to avoid that big-time haymaker early in the game because the longer the game stays tight, advantage slides to the underdog.
Always,
Always in sports. And it's just that's just the way it is. Because then the top – The favorite starts to feel even more pressure. Sometimes they tighten up a little bit, and the underdog gets even more and more confidence. And you see this in all levels of sports and all sports. It's just amazing what confidence can do. Now, Houston, I'm sure, believes they can beat Baylor. They better, because otherwise why are we playing the game? Mm-hmm. And UCLA, I guarantee you, believes they can beat Gonzaga. So they have confidence. But then to go out and play with them early on and basically back up that thinking of, hey, we're going to beat Gonzaga. But if you can have the best well-laid plans, if you're Houston, UCLA, you got the best thought processes going into these games tomorrow night. We can be Baylor. Baylor's not all that. We're really good. UCLA goes in there. Yeah, you know, Gonzaga's been great. They played great. But you know what? We can beat them. We're playing great. We won five in a row. And you believe that. But then you go out, and before the first at the first TV timeout, the 16-minute and under mark, Gonzaga's up 12-2, and Baylor's up 14-5. You suddenly question that a little bit. Now,
yeah.
Maybe. Maybe not. Some teams are really, really, really tough mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, UCLA, let's think back to that game that they had. Who was it? Goodness gracious. Alabama,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Alabama hit that three to go in overtime. A lot of teams would have lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
And UCLA, to their credit, fought right through it. So this UCLA team worries me a little bit against Gonzaga, and here's why I worry about it. And why I keep saying that I would still bet the field against Gonzaga, even though there's only three other teams remaining, is because everybody and their mother-in-law and their father-in-law and their grandma and their grandpa and niece and nephew, even people don't even know much about basketball, are going to pick Gonzaga to win.
Mm-hmm.
And UCLA is a 14-point dog. People don't think UCLA is going to win. Shoot, people don't think UCLA is going to be close in the game. They think it's going to be a blowout. So that's what the odds makers think as well. And when we get to these games where it's overwhelmingly this team is a favorite, especially in basketball, that concerns me. And if I were a betting man, which I am not, and Max, don't take all my advice here, okay? Or go the opposite. But if I were a betting man, I would say that UCLA covers 14 points.
Oh, yeah, I would too.
You know, now I might lose my money if I bet on it. It's very possible. But if I were going to bet my money, I don't think I'd bet my money straight up for UCLA to win. But I would say that I don't think it'll be the blowout that people expect or think. And I could be dead wrong. It could absolutely be Gonzaga up 20-4 and roll. Very, very possible. But something tells me it won't be that way. And honestly, as a fan, I want to see two really good games tomorrow night. I want to see Baylor and Houston and Gonzaga and UCLA go down to the wire. And I still want to see the favorites win, though, tomorrow. I want to see Baylor and Gonzaga in the championship. I definitely want to see Gonzaga in it for sure because I would like to see them run the table and go undefeated. I really would like to see that.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I'm betting against them in regards to the two remaining games, I just think you come so close, history tends to repeat itself. But you never know.
Like, the story's too good. Like, everything.
Exactly.
It's like they would have the same record as Indiana.
Yes.
They would win the tournament in Indiana.
Yes.
And it'd be like,
it's too good.
It's too perfect.
It's too perfect.
And so it's going to get ruined, I feel like.
And I think it's going to. I don't think
probably by Baylor.
I don't think it's going to get ruined tomorrow night by UCLA, but I would not be surprised, and I really want to be nuts and say that that'll happen, but I can't because I don't think UCLA has enough firepower. I do think Baylor is a tough matchup for Gonzaga.
For sure.
And so I think it only makes sense, you know, to go undefeated. If Gonzaga wins tomorrow night and they're 31-0, it's only right that they have to overcome the biggest obstacle in their path to go perfect. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And that's why I hope Baylor wins as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going for the Bears and the Zags tomorrow night, which means Houston, UCLA, congratulations. You're in the national championship the way my bracket picking has been this year. You agree with me going Baylor Gonzaga?
I can't.
Not a lot of people will disagree
with
me.
Anybody different.
There's not a lot of people.
That's who I want to win both games, right? Too, which is kind of rare that I want both that I'm picking. But
Not a lot of people are going to disagree with us on that one.
No.
What do you got to do to beat Gonzaga? What do you got to do? Well, you got to disrupt their offense. We told you their lowest point total is 73 points. Gonzaga converts 64% of their two-point field goal attempts, which is the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Baylor is a team that can play good defense and limit that percentage, no doubt. The other thing you got to be against Gonzaga, you got to be aggressive. And you've got to be able to drive the ball. But you also got to be able to be aggressive to get the ball in the paint. If you can get Drew Timmy in foul trouble, that changes things. Mm-hmm. That definitely changes that. And the other thing you can do, Gonzaga's really good at getting ball inside to Timmy. They are good at dribble penetration, and they move the ball really well. You probably need to force Gonzaga to take threes. They're not a great three-point shooting team. Kispert's great.
Mm-hmm.
But you force Gonzaga to take threes and then maybe hope that Kispert doesn't go nuts. And that means that's how good Gonzaga is. You're then hoping that you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I do believe that UCLA, Houston, and Baylor can all slow down the game against Gonzaga, and they can all, they're all capable of making the game in the 60s. And that's where I think Gonzaga will be uncomfortable. I'm not saying Gonzaga can't win in the 60s, but that's your only chance. I think if it gets into the, of the teams remaining, only Baylor, I think, can beat Gonzaga in the 70s.
Who can hang?
Right. Like, once you get to the 80s, I mean, I don't think anybody beats Gonzaga against the
80s. The reason you can, Gonzaga can still win in the 60s, but it's closer is because you're hanging, right?
Right,
if it's in the 60s,
right,
you probably have at least 50, maybe 60 yourself.
And right.
Once you get up there, I mean, you can, it seems like they're not offensively as productive anywhere near what Gonzaga is when they're hot.
Right.
And so you just can't hang with them once you get upper 70s and into the 80s. You might as well just pack it in, I feel like.
No, I agree with you. I think Baylor can beat them in the 70s.
Baylor can do it, yeah, because they're a team that offensively, I think, can hang.
I think they can.
They've got talent at the guard positions. And
my 7-year-old son in the bracket on the tiebreaker had, I think, Gonzaga beating Baylor 91-90.
Yeah.
That would be a fun championship.
It would.
Game. Man, that'd be fun.
A heck of a lot more fun than that UCLA Michigan.
But yeah, that was 51-49. Yeah, I don't want to see Baylor Gonzaga be 58-56. I want to see some offense in that one. If it's Houston and UCLA, that might be 42-40.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody wants to see that matchup, but who knows what we'll get. Roy Williams stepping down. This news broke before we had Brian Haney on the show yesterday. Brian was talking about Roy Williams and how he's met Roy and has an interview that he's waiting to. They did actually last year, talking a lot about Roy's time at Kansas, that it just hasn't been given the green light to air or be put out there. And Roy Williams retiring yesterday. And, you know, Roy Williams, I remember he got hired at Kansas. I was like, who's this guy? And then I heard about Dean Smith, and I'm like, well, if Dean Smith thinks he's good, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And you think about Roy Williams. When he came to Kansas to start his head coaching career, he was an older assistant coach at that time in his age. He went to KU, and a lot of people that, well, KU was coming off the national championship, and then Larry Brown got KU in trouble, and then Larry Brown left for the Spurs, if I remember correctly. And KU was on probation, so they couldn't even defend their title from 88. Danny and the Miracles won the title, and in 89, Kansas was on probation. A one-year probation. I remember Adonis Jordan kept his commitment and stayed with KU, and he had a good year in 89. It was Roy Williams' first year, and KU couldn't compete in postseason play or tournaments. And they went 19-12, which was really amazing considering what they had on their team at the time, and on probation. But then Roy Williams, just 2 years later, in his third year as head coach, took Kansas to the national championship game where they lost to Duke. Duke, of course, had just beaten UNLV with a gigantic upset in the national semifinals. Then Roy took them to the Final Four again, in 1993, lost to his mentor Dean Smith in the national semifinals. So in a span, coming off of his first year as head coach, he wasn't afraid of the probation. He went there to Kansas, and all he did at Kansas was make it to the tournament 14 times in 15 seasons, which, of course, the one he didn't was on probation. Took KU to the Final Four four times and was very close to winning a national championship, especially, of course, that one against Syracuse. If Jeff Graves and Nick Collison make a few free throws, Roy Williams would have won a national title. And would he have left? Because he left. Remember, he left after that loss to Syracuse in 03. And he said, I don't give a you know, what he said about, so I don't give a bleep about North Carolina right now, when Bonnie Bernstein interviewed him after that tough loss to Syracuse. And Roy, I think the biggest mistake Roy has made in his coaching career was when he, and to me, in fairness, it's really not a mistake. But Kansas fans, some of them, and this is called, it's really a compliment, because you loved Roy so much as a KU fan. You loved him so much, you appreciate everything he did, but you had some venom in your fangs as a KU fan. Because when Roy Williams turned down the North Carolina job the first time, he didn't think it would ever come up again. And he made the statement, I forgot exactly how he worded it, but basically that, you know, this is where he was going to be. He wasn't going to leave. And so forth and so on. And then, of course, Bill Guthridge didn't work out after, actually, he had success early on after Dean Smith stepped down. And then Roy had another chance. And Dean Smith really, really pleaded to Roy to come to Carolina and turn things around. And I think, obviously, you know, if you're Roy Williams, do you say no to Dean Smith, or Dean Smith gave you your break at Kansas? Because Brian Haney talked about in an interview that he had Roy Williams that Bob Frederick, athletic director at Kansas, didn't know a lot about Roy Williams. Dean Smith actually put in the call to Bob Frederick and said, you need to give this guy a chance. You won't regret it. And Bob Frederick had the, you know, the kahunas to do it. And it worked out extremely well, wouldn't you say, for KU and, of course, North Carolina. So that's another factor that KU fans didn't quite understand is that, you know, think about it. Put yourself in Roy Williams' shoes. The guy that taught you how to coach basketball, the guy that got you your job, your first head coaching job was not at Stetson University, okay, or Kansas Wesleyan or Austin Peay. It was North Alabama. It was Arkansas Little Rock. It was Kansas.
Yeah.
And do you really think that Texas or North Carolina right now, well, Texas hired Chris Beard, more on that in a moment, but do you think that Texas Tech, well, I shouldn't use that one, but do you think that Indiana, which they hired Mike Woodson, who's the NBA head coach at one point, do you think Indiana right now, do you think Indiana, I'll go through the Blue Bloods, do you think Kentucky, Indiana, if you consider them a Blue Blood, UCLA, Duke, and North Carolina, do you think, and North Carolina actually might do it again, by the way, but do you think that Duke and Kentucky and UCLA, those three are good examples, do you think in today's age or any time they would hire a guy that had no head coaching experience to lead their program?
No.
No. Now, North Carolina might do it again. Hubert Davis might be the next head coach. He has not had any head coaching experience. Wes Miller, their top assistants on Roy Williams' staff, and I think they're going to promote from within. I do. Mm-hmm. But they might not. But the point being is, I never was really upset with Roy Williams leaving Kansas. And what the one thing that kept me from really being upset about it was I disappointed? Sure. But I remember when he chose to leave, and what upset me, the only thing really upset me was Roy didn't win at all. Yeah. Like, he was so close, and I was like, man, I'd like to see him finish it out and get a title. His first title should be at KU. That was kind of my thinking. His first title as a coach should be at KU, and then he could go to North Carolina. And as Brian Heaney said yesterday, if KU beat Syracuse, he thinks Roy still would have gone, and Kansas can't be too mad because he won a national title. But you had the disappointing missing all the free throws, Jerry McNamara making all those threes, Carmelo Anthony and Syracuse, and KU has a three-pointer blocked at the buzzer, and KU should have won the game. They lost. So it's bad enough you're already upset as a KU fan that you lost the game in a national championship, and then you find out Roy's leaving. So now you're double mad. And what always caused me to not overreact to Roy Williams leaving and being like those fans was that I had one name on my list and one name only, and we had a sports talk show up in Seneca. We did it once a week, and I said it each week until Bill Self was hired. I said it, and sometimes I'm right with some of these predictions, sometimes I'm wrong. But to me, it was like drafting Peyton Manning. You knew he was going to be a great quarterback. How did you know? He hadn't played in the pros yet. You just knew. You just knew. And Bill Self was at Oral Roberts. He was at Tulsa and Illinois, and wherever he went, he was super successful. And there was a connection, of course, when Bill Self, you know, worked with Larry Brown back when he was, you know, whatever you want to call his position at the time. And I said it then. Listen, you have one name on your list and one name only. It's Bill Self. You go get Bill Self. I have no problems Roy Williams leaving Kansas. I remember saying that on our show. That's the guy you go get. I felt really confident Bill Self was the guy for Kansas. And I didn't even consider any other names. I'm like, you do whatever you got to do to go get Bill Self. And some people told me, well, why would he come to Kansas? He's got a good thing at Illinois. I said, dude, Illinois is not Kansas.
Yeah.
And he came to Kansas, and it's obviously worked out pretty well, right? 14 straight conference titles. He's won a national championship, been to multiple Final Fours. And that helped ease the pain to where when 5 years later in 08, when Bill Self in Kansas is in San Antonio for the national semifinals, in the national championship game, who's sitting in the stands with a KU sticker on his sweatshirt supporting the team? Roy Williams. Yeah. And that's when everybody quit being mad at Roy Williams because Kansas won the national title, and Roy was there to support it. Now, some Carolina fans didn't like it. There were some KU fans even at the time that didn't like it, like, oh, that's just too shaded Roy. And then, of course, once KU wins it all, then it's like, oh, all's forgiven. All would have been forgiven for the most part had they beaten Syracuse in 2003. Mm-hmm. So Roy Williams was an amazing coach at Kansas. His teams were fun to watch. And quite honestly, Bill Self's been better than Roy Williams. No question. No doubt. More conference titles. He's never been lower than a 4 seed. Roy had a year, I know, where he was an 8 seed and played Duke in the second round. But Roy, his teams were fun to watch. And Roy always had KU winning. He did. And he just didn't win at all at KU. So then he goes to North Carolina. He was at KU for 15 years. He goes to Carolina for 18 years. He wins 485 games at North Carolina. He won over 400 games at Kansas. And I don't know if there's another coach that's done that. It seems like I read somewhere where he's on a very small list, if not the only one.
I can't even think of it.
Yes, he is. He's the only coach in NCAA history to post 400 wins at two different schools. And think about the two schools, Kansas and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Two blue bloods. How many head coaches can you say in the history of college basketball have coached two blue bloods? I can't come up with one.
No.
I can't come up with one.
I don't think Louisville would be considered a blue blood.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I mean, that's probably the closest Kentucky and Louisville. Kentucky and Louisville.
That's true. That's a good point.
But other than that, I can't think of any.
So Roy Williams ranks fourth all-time among Division I coaches in wins with 903 wins. He won 77% of his games. At Kansas, he won 81% of his games. At North Carolina, 75%. At KU, he won 9 conference titles. North Carolina won 9 conference titles. Now, remember, he had 15 years at KU and 18 at North Carolina. So compare the numbers of what he did at KU and North Carolina. Listen to this. Roy Williams at Kansas was 418 wins, 101 losses. He won 81% of his games. At North Carolina, won 485 games and won 75% of his games. Conference titles in 15 seasons at Kansas, Roy Williams won 9 conference titles in 15 years, which is pretty amazing, but then looks not so great compared to Bill Self, and that's unfair to compare. North Carolina, he won 9 conference titles in 18 years. I will say I think it's a little easier to win the Big 8 and the Big 12 than it is to win the ACC with Duke in your backyard. Yeah. But that's pretty impressive. Conference tournament titles. He won 4 with Kansas, 3 with North Carolina. NCAA tournament record was better at North Carolina, 45-13. At Kansas, 34-14. Final fours, 4-15 years at Kansas, 5-18 years at North Carolina. But the biggest difference, of course, is what?
National championships.
He won 3 national championships.
Second year at Carolina, he got his first one.
He won 3 national championships at Carolina, and he never won at all. He was in the finals twice in 91 and 03 at Kansas, and both times lost in the championship. And as I said to Brian Haney yesterday, Roy Williams is one of, I think, what is it, one of 5 or 6 coaches that have won 3 or more titles. Like Bobby Knight, I believe, has won. Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden. That might be the 4. There might be Jim Calhoun. Did he win 3? I don't remember. There's 4 or 5 coaches that are on that list. You can pull it up real quick on Wikipedia or whatever. I know we've looked over this before because we compared Bill Self and Roy Williams a few years ago. And I said, I'll go ahead and keep Bill. And then when Bill and Roy met, when their teams were, you know, pretty well, how about Roy and Bill meeting in the Final Four in 2008? Carolina had a team that was loaded. KU had a team that was loaded. And KU blew the doors off of North Carolina. And then KU beat North Carolina in the tournament later on, a few years later, although Carolina was a lower seed. So, and I remember when Kansas, oh, here's another one. When Kansas won the Elite Eight game over North Carolina in St. Louis, Kansas went to a box and won, and Roy didn't really recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if everything was exactly equal talent-wise, I think Bill Self might be the better coach than Roy Williams. And that's not saying Roy Williams is a bad coach. It's just saying that head-to-head, in the two biggest games that Roy Williams and Bill Self coached against one another, while Self was at KU and Williams at North Carolina, Kansas won both, the two biggest ones. The Elite Eight and the national semifinal. But yet, Roy's overall resume is better than Bill Self's.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Self only has 1 title. Bill Self has 3 Final Fours. Is that right? 3? Phil? I'm trying to think. I think he has 3.
Ooh, sounds right, doesn't it?
I think it's 3. And of course, North Carolina, Roy in his career has 9 Final Fours, but 5 at Carolina, 4 at Kansas. So Roy still has more Final Four appearances at Kansas than Bill Self does as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he has more championships overall than Bill at what he did at North Carolina. So you can go back and forth and have the argument, well, who's the better coach, Bill Self or Roy Williams? I'll tell you, I think if all the things are equal, Bill Self's maybe the better strategist and has the better, you know, plays out of timeouts and so forth and so on. At the same time, part of it is recruiting. And Bill's a really good recruiter, and Roy Williams is a great recruiter at both Kansas and at North Carolina. So you look at what Roy Williams did. He had 3 national titles, but if KU makes just a few free throws, which they were god-awful, 12 of 30 in that game in 03, Roy Williams wins a fourth. He wins his first title at Kansas. Then he goes to Carolina. He wins 3 more. That's 4. And if it wasn't for Villanova's absolutely fantastically executed play with a few seconds left, in the national championship game, what year was that? 16? Whatever. Well, yeah, it was 16. Carolina would have won that game. Marcus Page hit that shot. I mean, it was like, oh, my God, North Carolina's going to win. And then Villanova broke their heart. And that's the only buzzer beater other than Phi Slamma Jamma losing to North Carolina State with the air ball that was, you know, made by North Carolina State. That's the only buzzer beater I know at the end of a national championship game. You talk about breaking a team's heart. National championship game, Carolina makes the unbelievable shot. Marcus Page would have been gone down as the, one of the greatest shots in North Carolina history. Instead, it's an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Mario Chalmers hits a three to tie it and send it overtime, and still people today think that was the game-winning shot, and it wasn't. It was the game-saving shot.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this with people and KU fans. I have a few that still argue with me. I'm like, what are you talking about? It was not the game-winning shot. Well, the game was over when we went to overtime. No, it wasn't. They still played five minutes of overtime.
Yeah.
The game was not over when Mario Chalmers made the shot. The game was saved by Mario Chalmers' three-point shot. And then Kansas scored the first few buckets of overtime, and that's when you felt like it was over. The key was hit that first shot in overtime because Memphis is reeling. Well, that's what Alabama needed to do against UCLA, and they didn't. UCLA hit the three in that game recently, and they went on to win the game and recovered from that. So we remember Mario Chalmers' shot, right? But if Kansas loses that game, it's not nearly as well remembered.
No.
Same thing with the kid for Alabama. He makes that great three-point shot, but now it's an afterthought. His team lost.
Yeah.
Marcus Page's shot was more incredible than maybe the others I've just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Remember they were like double clutch in midair in front of North Carolina bench, I believe, and he was like 5 feet behind the three-point line and made it. And North Carolina, everybody's thinking, all right, Carolina's going to win this thing. And Villanova drew up a perfect play, and Jenkins hit the three, and it broke Roy's heart, and it broke North Carolina. However, the very next year, Carolina went up against a one-loss Gonzaga team and beat them in the national championship. So a year later, North Carolina recovered and won it all after they had Heartbreak Hotel the year before. Mm-hmm. Roy Williams was so close to five national championships. National championships. And you look at the three that he won, they didn't come down to the very last shot, if I remember correctly. But the two he lost did.
Yeah.
So Roy could have easily won five national championships. Who are the coaches with three or more titles?
Start at the top, obviously John Wooden, 10. Adolph Rupp had four.
Oh, I forgot Rupp.
Mike Krzyzewski has five.
Yep.
And then, so then after that, it's Roy, Jim Calhoun, and Bob Knight.
I did have them right. Three. I remembered all of them except Adolph Rupp because that we did some research on that a year or two ago. That was only, so that's only five or six coaches? Six coaches?
Wooden, Rupp. Six, yeah.
There's only six coaches in college basketball history that have won three or more national championships.
Yeah. Plenty.
How many have won five? Two, right?
That's, just Krzyzewski and Wooden.
So Roy could be, I mean, he's so close to having five.
Yeah.
But that's elite company. And, you know, maybe Bill Self will join that by the time his coaching career is over and win a couple more at Kansas. But that's the thing that you get spoiled by as a fan. You think, well, Bill's only won one title.
Mm-hmm.
Or Bill wins a second title. He coaches at KU for 35 years, so he only won two titles. Dude, if Bill Self wins two titles as a coach at Kansas, he's an elite company. Because that hasn't been done by a ton of coaches either. If you got the list, you could count up how many coaches actually have two national championships.
It only goes to, like, the top 10.
Okay.
So I don't know.
But I'm going to tell you, there's not tons of coaches that have two national championship rings. So if you can get one, you're doing all right. If you can get two, that's great. And you get three or more, you are part of, honestly, Mount Rushmore of college basketball coaching. And Roy Williams, what he did is pretty super impressive. And he steps away at the age of 70. He could easily coach more. There's no doubt about it. He could coach more if he wanted to. This year, here's something that's crazy about Roy Williams. He went to the NCAA tournament 30 times with KU and North Carolina. You know how many times he lost in the first round?
Once.
This year?
Yeah.
He was 29.
I didn't think he had lost until this year.
He was 29-0 in the first round.
Yeah.
29-0 until this year. He was 10 years an assistant coach at North Carolina under Dean Smith. Then, of course, he went to Kansas, and he coached overall 48 years it was, but 33 years as a head coach. So why, Roy, why are you stepping away from the game with 903 career wins, which on the list of coaching wins, I had it here. Let me see if I can find it. I believe that's fourth all-time right now, either fourth or fifth. There we go. It is fourth all-time. Bobby Knight, Roy Williams ends with one more win than Bobby Knight. Bob Huggins has 900, so Huggins will pass Roy if Bob, God willing, is healthy and coaches next year at West Virginia. So Krzyzewski has 1,170. Jim Boeheim has 982, and he lost some of those wins, remember, because of stuff. Jim Calhoun, 918. And Roy Williams, 903, Bob Knight, 902, and Bob Huggins, 900. There are only six coaches in the history of college basketball that have won 900 more games. Roy Williams right now is one of those six, and he's also one of six to win three national titles or more, and he is fourth on the all-time win chart. That, my friends, is unbelievable. And if he coached another year, he'd pass Jim Calhoun, and he'd be third on that list. But Huggins is still going strong. So Roy, at the age of 70, steps away coaching North Carolina, and he says it's pretty simple. He came to the conclusion he's no longer the right guy for the job.
Everybody wants to know the reason, and the reason is very simple. Every time somebody asked me how long I was going to go, I would always say, as long as my health allows me to do it. But deep down inside, I knew that the only thing that would speed that up, if I did not feel that I was any longer the right man for the job. I'm not going to say the best man, because I never thought I was the best at anything. But 15 years at Kansas, I thought I was the right man. And this time at North Carolina, I thought I was the right man. I no longer feel that I am the right man for the job.
I've always liked Roy Williams. I've always admired him. I've always respected him, and I appreciated him at Kansas. And that's why it hurt me to see him getting so many mean comments when he left, which means that people loved him. That's what it means.
100%.
They loved him. And then you get Bill Self. You know, Bill Self walks away. I don't think there'll be the same venom towards Bill Self leaving, no matter where he goes, because he did win a national title, all those conference championships as well. And I think people, I think there are probably some KU fans that know he wasn't going to be a lifer at Kansas. But I think a lot of people thought Roy was going to be a lifer at Kansas. And then, of course, North Carolina, especially when he turned it down the first time. Once he turned it down the first time, that's where KU fans just were like, phew, he's never going. Yep. He's never going. He's a lifer now. Because the only job he'll leave Kansas for is North Carolina, which is true. And then the second time it came open, it was just too much for him to turn down, and he took it. And that opened the door for Bill Self at Kansas. So to me, I would say things worked out very well for Roy Williams and what happened at North Carolina. I think they got the court named after him, by the way. And I think, obviously, things worked out for Kansas by getting Bill Self. So I think everybody came out a winner in this thing. And but Roy Williams, this is how I think you judge a coach and how good they are, how great of a coach they are, is by what the players say that used to play for him. Like, you can get all caught up in the numbers I just gave. 903 wins, 29-1 in first-round NCAA tournaments, made it to the tournament 30 times, and went to 9 Final Fours, 3 national championships, and so forth and so on. You can get caught up in that, and that is all impressive, and there's no doubt he's one of the greatest coaches of all time in college basketball. But then you see what all these former KU and North Carolina players are saying, talking about being a father figure, about how he changed their lives, about how they became men when they walked in and got recruited by Roy Williams. And it comes from both KU players like Scott Pollard and Jeff Boshi. It's coming from North Carolina players like Michael Jordan, Roy Williams was an assistant when Jordan played at North Carolina. But that tells you how much that he was appreciated as an assistant. Of course, Danny Green has went back and donated money to endowment funds and so forth and wants to get back to North Carolina. And he said the reason he does it is because of Roy Williams. I mean, those are very powerful stories coming from former alums and players. And you don't see hardly anybody saying anything bad, really, honestly, ever, about Roy Williams.
No.
You don't. And so, you know, he steps away at the age of 70. And you think of his career, it was a little bit unorthodox. He was an assistant for a very long time and then got a blue blood job as his first head coaching job and then succeeded. And in most cases, that would have been a disaster. And then to do what he did at two storied programs, all the success he had, and then to bookend it with, I was a late starter as a head coach, spent 10 years on the bench with Dean Smith in North Carolina, had a lot of success. And then you're like, well, surely he's going to coach till he's 80, right? And at 70, he's like, you know what, I'm done. Just, it surprised a lot of people. And from what I'm understanding, one of the big reasons why he stepped away, he said, I'm not, if you listen to that comment again, he said, I'm no longer the right man. There is no doubt, and he has said some things, and he has been interviewed about things, that he wasn't really super happy with the way college basketball was going in regards to various things. The transfer portal stuff is one. The national letters of intent, guys reneging on things,
Name, image, license
is another one that is a big one for him. He felt like college athletics were going the route of pros, and that, you know, that would change the game. And he's right, to be quite honest with you. But he just got to the point where it's not really worth it. And here's the thing now. With all of the transferring that's allowed and so forth, at the age of 70, Roy Williams, and every coach has to do this now, you're not just recruiting guys that come to your program and you take a deep sigh of relief. You're like, okay, I got these guys for 4 years. You've got to like, think about this. Every year now in college basketball, you not only have to recruit guys to replace your seniors or guys that go early to the NBA, you also have to recruit the players that are still on your team. You have to recruit every year to keep them on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very taxing and wear on a coach, especially at the age of 70. And Roy, we know, has had some lightheaded situations. He's had a few health issues. I admire him for stepping away and doing this because I think it'd be easy for him to say, "Yeah, I got a good team coming back." And he does. They're a talented team. They might be a national championship contender next year. And I admire him for saying, "You know what? I'm done." I admire guys that step away when they're still really good. I don't like it, but I respect the heck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Smith, Barry Sanders, running backs NFL, Calvin Johnson, wide receiver, guys that step away from the game at their highest level. You know, I respected Jordan for retiring a couple times when he was at the highest level. Now he came back maybe too many times, but I respect it and I understand it. And Roy Williams still has some hopefully years in his life where he can sit back and relax a little bit, enjoy his family. Because college basketball, college football, any coaching job really for that matter at the college level is a 12-month, 365-day-a-year job. Do they get paid handsomely for it? Yeah. Do they have an occasional day off? Yeah. And I'll bet you this. When Roy Williams goes golfing, which he likes to golf, like do a lot of coaches, when Roy Williams goes golfing, I guarantee you he isn't completely checked out of his job. He's probably getting phone calls. He's checking texts, emails, especially in recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And the job, even when you have a day off, you're not really have a day off. And so I think Roy Williams has earned this retirement. He got to choose to go out on his own terms, not stay too long, and then guys try to force you out, like maybe Bill Snyder stayed too long at K-State, possibly. See?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you go back, you won't remember how it ended for Bill Snyder or other coaches, but you'll remember what great things they did. But with Roy, I mean, North Carolina still was they were an 8-seed in NCAA tournament. They had a good year, not to North Carolina standards, but they didn't fall off the map like they did with Bill Guthridge in his final year. And he can say that he's leaving this program in good shape for the next coach, who could be Hubert Davis, former player at North Carolina. It could be Wes Miller's an assistant. It could be somebody outside the program. But Roy Williams deserves to go out on his own terms, and that's exactly what he did yesterday. And I say congratulations.
Definitely. I mean, that's the goal, is to be able to do it and get out when you feel like it's time for you to get out, and not, you know, obviously you brought up Bill Snyder. It's like, obviously he didn't want to leave, and it was not his decision to leave.
That's not the way you want to see it
but
in.
Now it's, you know, and maybe there was some chirping from behind the scenes at North Carolina too, to try to get Roy to go ahead and make this decision, just the way last couple years have gone for him. Obviously this year they made it back to the tournament, so it's not like they were just completely terrible this year. So, but yeah, I think it's a good thing for a guy like that to be able to say, yeah, okay, on my terms, I'm done. We'll see you later. And best of luck moving forward. And he'll be at North Carolina. I mean, he'll be a part of that for
the rest of his life.
He's not just going to leave Chapel Hill and be like, see you later, right off into the sunset type of deal. But, I think it's good for Roy Williams to be able to do it the way he did it.
No doubt about it. And like I said, I think it's the way you want to see guys go out on their own terms. And the landscape of college basketball is changing. And if this – names and the it's being debated in by elected officials and even courts about whether or not players are going to be paid or being allowed to accept money for name, image, and likeness. And if that does happen, the landscape of college sports changes completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, you know, I understand Jay Billis at times, and I agree with him sometimes, and sometimes I disagree, and I understand his points, and he makes good points, and I do get it. But I'm just telling you, be careful. Once you let the genie out of the bottle, you ain't going to put it back in. And I think you're already seeing that from a transfer perspective. I think you're already seeing it. And there's no doubt that Roy Williams was maybe a little bit fed up with some of this stuff. So good for him to not stress out and have a heart attack and die on the court. I don't want to see that happen to anybody. Okay, now on the flip side, you've got a younger coach, Chris Baird, who is leaving Texas Tech for Texas. Now, all kinds of sources had said that once April 1st came around, April Fool's Day, the buyout dropped from $5 million to $4 million, that Texas Tech was going to lose him, that Chris Beard was going to go to Texas. And you may say, well, what in the world? Why would he go from Texas Tech to Texas when Texas Tech might be the better program right now anyway? Well, Chris Beard built up Texas Tech. I mean, it's amazing what he did there. And Texas, Shaka Smart left for Marquette. But here's what you need to understand, and it's a little bit similar to Roy Williams, a little bit, is that Chris Beard, he's an alum of Texas, and he also was an assistant at Texas at one time, okay? Mm-hmm. So he obviously bleeds orange, hook 'em. And when the opportunity came up to take the job, Chris Beard apparently, it sounds like he pretty much jumped on it. But the athletic director at Texas Tech, Kirby Hocut, is very frustrated, very upset, and you know what? Honestly, I get it.
Of course.
Totally get it. Because here's the thing. Texas Tech did everything they could to keep their head coach. I mean everything. But you can't keep a guy that doesn't want to be there.
No.
You know, and it doesn't sound like money was the issue. Texas Tech's facilities might be better than Texas in regards to the basketball part. So Kirby Hocut, the athletic director of Texas Tech, he had a press conference yesterday, and he's trying to put his best face on, but eventually he basically just was honest, and to me it is refreshing. It's almost breathtaking when a guy in today's PC format and culture that we live in, which, yes, we do have cancel culture. You can argue against it all you want. We have it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can argue to the degree that we have in different cases here and there, but this is pretty amazing. Last year, this is how the story begins. Last fall, the Red Raiders remained proactive in trying to keep Chris Beard in Lubbock by offering him a lifetime or rolling contract on top of the lucrative extension that Beard had signed in 2019, making him one of the highest-paid coaches in all of college basketball. Beard declined. Hocut said it became obvious in the months ahead that there was not an interest in that type of lifetime agreement or rolling contract. The Texas Tech administration remained persistent, continuing discussions into the NCAA tournament, during which Hocut and Tony Hernandez, Hocut's chief operating officer, sat down with Beard's agents and continued to talk about future opportunities. Those conversations continued in a different vein over recent days after Texas Athletics Director Chris Del Conte called Hocut to ask for permissions to interview Beard as a professional courtesy. During a conversation in Beard's office on Wednesday afternoon, Hocut and Beard discussed the future of Texas Tech basketball. Late in the evening, Beard called Hocut. Hocut said, I could tell that he had a decision to make, and I could tell it was weighing very heavily on him, and he wanted to take a night to sleep on it and to make his final decision at some point today. About 12 hours later, Beard's mind was made up. He called Hocut to tell him that he was returning to Austin to be the head coach of the Longhorns. And Beard's mind was truly made up, as the now former Texas Tech head coach declined to allow the Red Raiders to even provide a counteroffer, leaving Hocut and the athletic director and Texas Tech administration officials somewhat angry and also dejected and frustrated all at the same time. Here's Texas Tech athletic director Kirby Hocut.
We're going to fight, to use a term that Coach Beard uses every day. You get in the fight. We've been in the fight for 5 years, and the fight's not over. And you have somebody that then walks away to go to an in-conference school, an in-state school. Absolutely, that frustrates you. Heck yeah, it does. If we're honest and loyal and sincere about talking about getting in the fight, and you're in the fight every day, yeah, frustration would be a kind word to summarize it.
I love hearing that stuff, because he didn't take the company line. He just flat out said what everybody knows, that's what they feel. Mm-hmm. He just said, listen, this is frustrating. We did everything to keep this guy. We treated him great. We paid him great. He did his job. We were rewarding him for his job. And we did everything to keep him, and we didn't even get allowed to provide a counteroffer. I totally get where he's coming from. And it's got to be frustrating, because Texas Tech has really not been on the map in college basketball. And what Chris Beard's done at Texas Tech is amazing. Now, he can't do it by himself. He had to support administration. Mm-hmm. They're all on the same page. It worked out well. But the fact that he wasn't willing to do a rolling lifetime contract tells you all you needed to know. And that was he was not going to be a Texas Tech lifer. He didn't want to be a Texas Tech lifer. And you probably should have known that if Texas' job ever comes up, he's probably going to run and take it. And that's exactly what he did. And on the flip side, I totally get where the athletic director of Texas Tech is coming from. It's refreshing to hear him say that. And heck yeah, it's frustrating. We lost the greatest coach we've probably ever had in Texas Tech basketball history. Bob Knight came in at the end of his career. Chris Beard was a better coach at Texas Tech than Bob Knight was at Texas Tech. I'm not saying Chris Beard is a better coach than Bob Knight overall, because I think Chris Beard still has to do some things to get to that point. But the point being is that on the flip side, I also understand where Chris Beard's coming from. Why waste Texas Tech's time and tell them to come up with a counteroffer when you know the place you want to be is Texas? I mean, you know April 1st the buyout goes down a million. Everybody knew Texas is going to wait to officially get him as the head coach once the buyout went down a million. So Texas saves $1 million by waiting a few days. It was the worst kept secret in college basketball. Chris Beard was going to Texas. Everybody was saying he was going to Texas. Once you get to April 1st, he's going to Texas. What do you know? Yesterday, April 1st, as soon as they possibly could announce it, it was over. And Chris Beard was leaving town. Does that mean Chris Beard hates Texas Tech or he was upset with Texas Tech? No. Does it mean Texas Tech didn't do enough to keep him there? No. It simply means Chris Beard wanted to go back home. Mm-hmm. And isn't that exactly what Roy Williams wanted to do?
Yeah.
There's the parallel, isn't it? Isn't it ironic? On all days, on April Fool's Day, two gigantic coaching stories come out in college basketball. Isn't it ironic that the day Roy Williams retires is the day Chris Beard leaves to go home?
There's another gigantic coaching story that just happened, too.
Okay, well, hold on a second.
So it's all going to tie in, too.
Okay. So you can break that here in a moment. So,
but it is interesting that go home on the day Roy Williams retired when he went home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so people at Texas Tech are going to what? They're going to be bitter and upset that Chris Beard left. And now, you know, KU fans were upset that Roy went to North Carolina. Can you imagine if Roy went to, say, somebody in within the Big 8 or Big 12? Mm-hmm. Now, this is even worse because Chris Beard is going not only from Texas Tech to, say, Oklahoma State. He's going to Texas.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's really going to burn Texas Tech fans. And here is another similarity. Roy Williams got them close to winning it all, didn't quite at Kansas. Mm-hmm. Chris Beard got him to the national title game, and if DeAndre Hunter doesn't hit a three-pointer in the corner to send it in overtime, Texas Tech wins the title, and they might cut him a little bit of slack, even though he was going to Texas.
Yeah.
But he didn't win a national title. And there are people, and Chris Beard said all the right things, and of course he didn't know the Texas job was going to pop up, probably.
No.
So he said the right things, just like Roy said back at Kansas, and that was, hey, you know, it's about fight, and I truly believe we're going to win a national championship here at Texas Tech. We're very close. And then Texas pops up. And all of a sudden, you got to go, well, what's best for me and my family? My heart has always wanted that job. That's my job. That's my dream job. Texas is my dream job. And now I have the chance to take it. I'm going to turn it down because the athletic director of Texas Tech's going to be mad at me?
Yeah.
I'm going to turn it down because a whole bunch of people I've never truly met are going to be upset with me? I'm going to turn it down because boosters at Texas Tech are upset with me? Well, guess what? Boosters at Texas are going to love me for coming back. Mm-hmm. And so I don't blame – that's why I never blame Roy Williams for leaving. And I do not blame Chris Beard for leaving Texas Tech for Texas. I feel and I felt for Kansas when Roy left, and I truly feel for Texas Tech even more so. Because at Kansas, you know you're going to get a good guy. At Texas Tech, I think there's a question mark. Are we going to get a guy that comes to Lubbock, or is it going to be Mark Adams, who's an assistant, who's been a head coach or an assistant coach at 23 years at lower levels? Maybe he's going to be sliding in there, and he's just going to take Texas Tech to the next level, and they win a national title. And you may have the same situation 10 years from now, look back on it, and go, you know what? The best thing that maybe happened was Chris Beard left, and now we're the perennial Big 12 champion all the time, just like Bill Self became at Kansas after Roy left. We can't automatically say things are going to be completely worse without Chris Beard at Texas Tech. But Texas Tech is not a blue blood. Texas Tech didn't have a pedigree. Kansas had a pedigree before Roy Williams got to Kansas. They have an even bigger one because of Roy Williams and then Bill Self. Texas Tech doesn't have that pedigree. So that's got to be the scary part for people at Texas Tech, Red Raider fans, is that we've got a guy that's one of the best coaches in college basketball. We would have gave him anything he wanted, and he didn't even want to listen to a counteroffer. How are you going to get mad at a guy that is going home and gets his dream job? Because if you, as a fan, if you're mad about it, if you, as an administrator, deep down, Kirby Hocutt knows this, It's no different from Kirby Hokut. I don't know where he went to school at. I don't know where his dream job's at.
I think he's from K-State, actually.
Okay, yeah, that's right, he did.
Yeah.
But if Kirby Hokut decides to leave Texas Tech and does a great job there and goes to Kansas State, and that's his dream job, he wants to go back home, he has that prerogative, and he should.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing. When Kirby Hokut is upset and frustrated and said those things yesterday, I totally get it. I do. I feel his pain. I really, truly do. At the same time, Kirby Hokut has to stop for a second and say, well, what if I were given that opportunity? How would I handle it? And to me, it's really, honestly, more disrespectful if you do tell Texas Tech, provide a counteroffer, when you all along know you're not going to stay at Texas Tech. So to me, that's disrespectful by asking for a counteroffer. Texas Tech takes his disrespect because they couldn't even provide a counteroffer. Now, the reason they're upset by that is they think that somehow they could have maybe kept him with a counteroffer. I'm telling you right now, it's obvious they couldn't. So it's interesting to see it from each perspective. So there are similarities and parallels to Chris Beard and Roy Williams' situation all these years later, 18 years between when these things happen. But ironically, there's a bookend. Roy ends his coaching career on April Fool's Day yesterday, and the same day Chris Beard goes home to Texas. It's somewhat similar, except that you're going from Tech to Texas within state and in the same conference. And that's the other thing that's going to really burn you as a Tech fan. You got to face Texas twice or maybe three times a year, whereas KU and North Carolina, the only time you could really get mad when there's a game against Carolina and Kansas was the tournament. And it only happened a few times. Okay, what's the other news?
So book in the other side of it, because Bill Self now has a lifetime contract at Kansas.
Boom! There you go. There you go.
Just got signed today, set to expire next March, his current contract. But extension is a lifetime contract for Bill Self at KU.
And Brian Haney said yesterday on our very show when he was with us, he said the new athletic director, whoever that's going to be, he said, you know, everybody talks about the priorities, like, you know, finding a football coach and doing this and doing that. But he mentioned yesterday that maybe the most important priority for the new athletic director is to lock up Bill Self with an extension. That might be more important than find a new football coach. And even as a university, it might be more important to get Bill taken care of before you even get an AD. And that's exactly what's happened, apparently. Yeah. Now, this is very interesting. Because, man, we're going to go a little long today. You never know what's going to happen on the show.
Hey, at least we got it on the show,
yes.
Right? At least.
Yes, finally it paid to go a little long. Because if we got off at 10, we would have missed this. But here's the question about Bill Self's situation. There is an NCAA investigation. There is a cloud over the university. I would think there's language in this thing to protect the university if they find out that Bill was guilty of violations.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see, I don't know if I'd love to see it. It'd be too much for me to understand because I'm not a lawyer, all the legalese, as I call it. But that's a new 5-year rolling agreement that automatically adds 1 year at the conclusion of each season for the remainder of his career. Financial terms are not immediately available. Bill Self is 58. His contract is set to expire after next season. And there are going to be a lot of questions. Right now, Kansas is, and Coach Self, of course, is under investigation because he's part of the basketball program. He's the head coach. That they're in the latter stages of NCAA investigation alleging five level one violations, which are the most severe.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting. The interim AD is Kurt Watson. So, Bill Self gets this new deal, not with the new AD in place. Bill Self, obviously his success is unbelievable. 82% winning percentage, which is actually a little bit better than Roy Williams. 14 consecutive Big 12 titles. He's been to 3 Final Fours, 1 national championship. He's been a 4 seed every single one of his 18 seasons. He only has 15 losses at Allen Fieldhouse, 277 wins, 15 losses. I mean, that is pretty doggone impressive. But with the cloud that's there, there's got to be some language in there to protect Kansas.
Language or, I mean, they're obviously hitching their wagon to Bill Self no matter what.
They are.
Right now. And I feel like that must be their thinking, that they've done everything that they can think of, and there's probably language in there, but they've done everything they can think of and trust that Bill Self is being honest with them and Les Miles, compared to Les Miles, who wasn't, I guess.
But do you really think Kansas has a choice in this thing when you really think about it? Even though there's a cloud of the investigation, do you really think Kansas has a choice in this thing? They have to do this, don't they not?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Whether there's investigation or not, they have to do this. And here's why I say they have to do it. First of all, there's no investigation. You have to do it, or you might lose him somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's an investigation that's still going on. you still have to do it, because what happens? They find out Bill Self, nothing was wrong, or they find out there's no punishment, yeah, or there's a slap on the wrist. You're gonna risk not be, because this shows that you're behind Bill Self. If this thing rolls out, plays out, and the NCAA does nothing to the University of Kansas, like they did with the North Carolina academic fraud and the Miami situation, if the NCAA talks big but then does nothing, and Kansas doesn't back him up with a contract extension, it doesn't have to be a lifetimer, but that's what they've got. Mm-hmm. And Kansas doesn't do anything. You don't think Bill Self will recognize and go, okay, they were waiting this out, and they didn't fully, truly believe me. Well, I think I may go to the NBA now, because the NBA is always an option for Bill Self. I think Kansas had to do this. And there are going to be people that are going to criticize it. They're going to say, well, how can you do this? But there's a cloud investigation. Once again, it goes back to understanding the nature of the beast of college sports. When you have a great coach, just like a great quarterback in the National Football League, you pay the guy his money, and you lock him up, and you keep him. And that's the frustrating thing with Texas Tech. They had their guy, but they couldn't keep him. Thus, all their frustration. Whereas Kansas, Bill Self, there is no other dream job for Bill Self. There is no college. Oklahoma State's not a dream job for him because it's a step down from KU. He knows that. I think he still might be the head coach of Oklahoma State, winding down his career, you know, whatever. But who knows? An investigation, and he gets fired, and whatever, and 5 years from now, he's the head coach of Oklahoma State. I don't know. But to me, I don't think there's a dream job out there other than the one he has. I think Bill Self has pretty much his dream job. Unless the Spurs, I still say, his buddy, you know all about that. I think that's the only job he'd take in the NBA would be, and I don't know if he wants to follow Popovich, because that's big shoes to follow.
No.
But the NBA, there's no college institution I think that KU's got to worry about Bill Self leaving for. It would be the NBA.
There's, as I get further and further and see what the Spurs are doing, this is just a quick thing, so to see what they're doing right now, Bill Self's not the man. That's not the job he wants. He wants it because his buddy's the GM, right, maybe. But that's not the job he wants, because he's not getting high-quality free agents to come down to San Antonio.
Right.
He's going to have to draft and develop. Right. And so,
now, OKC,
I don't know if that's what he would want.
They mentioned OKC, because that's, you know, back
and that's
home state.
You know, being in Oklahoma.
Right.
But I feel like Kansas is a better opportunity for him than any NBA job based on that fact, right? Unless he's going to go to the Lakers or something like that, you know, where he's got a lot of built-in advantages for free agency and things like that. Things are not going the way that a new coach wants to come in and follow Greg Popovich, anybody in San Antonio.
Right.
Just be the way that it's set up with the free agents are taking less money to go win, you know, chase rings, basically.
Yeah.
And so I don't ever see that happening with Bill Self at San Antonio from that aspect of it.
I
understand the point of him being a friend.
I'll tell you something here, and it's probably an outside shot, but Oklahoma City's rounded up tons of draft picks over the next 7 years. I mean, they got a ton. And that means they can package a bunch of draft picks. When they get their younger core that they're putting together, and once they get good enough to where they think they can contend and win a title, they can do what the Clippers did, and they can go package and go get a Paul George in a trade, and they can go get a Kawhi Leonard in free agency, and all of a sudden Oklahoma City looks attractive. And yeah, you might have a coach that's doing the right thing, or maybe that happens, but then the coach doesn't get him over the hump, and then Bill Self to the rescue. It'd be attractive. You have everything in place. It's his home state. It'd be an NBA job. You wouldn't be following Greg Popovich's shoes. That, to me, there's two jobs in NBA that Bill Self would be interested in, if he's even fully interested in NBA, and that would be the Spurs with his buddy there and Oklahoma City. Those are the two jobs I see as being the biggest competition for Kansas to keep Bill Self down the line. And quite honestly, I don't even think there's a great chance of any of that happening either, because I think Bill Self wants to be at Kansas, and obviously I think he does. I mean, you're agreeing to a lifetime contract, and there is a difference between Chris Beard and Bill Self. Bill wants to be at Kansas. Chris Beard wanted to go to Texas. Now, here's the thing. 15 years from now, Chris Beard might have offers to go to the NBA and do a great job at Texas. Is he going to leave his dream job at Texas to go to the NBA, or is he going to stay at Texas and be happy? We'll find out.
Then you ask, okay, on a different hypothetical, what if Chris Beard was at Kansas? Is his dream job still Texas? And that's kind of what we're talking about.
I would argue
with
Bill Self
at Oklahoma State,
Exactly.
So Bill Self, had he not gone, he might have gone from Illinois to Oklahoma State.
Maybe.
But had he not gone to Kansas and had this kind of success, again, that's all predicated on success, because if you don't succeed, you're probably going to get fired. You might end up in Texas anyway, because they don't have the same standards as Kansas does.
Right.
But I think that your mind can change, right? Like, so if Chris Beard down the road Bill Self goes to the NBA, Kansas says, hey, we want Chris Beard for what he's done at Texas. Is Texas still his dream job, or does he want to go coach at a blue blood and have that class?
I would say he probably wouldn't go to Kansas. I think the flip side of that, though, is what you initially said. If he was already at Kansas, then I think he turns down Texas. I do. And I think if Bill Self is, let's say he goes from Illinois to Oklahoma State, as you said in your hypothetical, and Kansas pops up, Bill Self leaves his alma mater to go to Kansas. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that. That's just, we don't know for sure, but yeah, I mean, Bill Self, home is Lawrence. It's not Stillwater anymore. I do think down the line, years from now, Bill Self and KU have a falling out, or something happens, or who knows, maybe Bill's forced out. Oklahoma State, if they have an opening, they'd be happy to take him on in his final years as coach. Mm-hmm. I could still see that happening at Oklahoma State. I don't see Bill Self in his prime and doing great going to Oklahoma State. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
And if Bill Self doesn't choose to do that, the only other way he'd go to Oklahoma State would be he's forced out of KU. That would mean that KU is really starting to struggle somehow and things have gone south. And mm-hmm. as long as there isn't horrible things that come out of this investigation and horrible punishment, Kansas should be able to weather this storm and Bill Self will be fine.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Bill Self's 58. Roy Williams, I said yesterday, he retired at the age of 70. If you're sitting here and you're wondering, well, Bill Self, he can easily get the three national championships because Roy has three, and he coached for 33 years. At the age of 70, Roy has three. Bill Self, well, he's a lot younger than Roy. He's got plenty of time to get to two more and meet Roy's total, if you care about that, and get to that Mount Rushmore of coaches. As we just said, there's only six in the history of the college basketball with three or more national titles. That means Bill Self has to win two of the next 12 national championships. Mm-hmm. The odds of that are not very good. Now, if you go backwards, though, and you go to 2008 after he won his first title, you would say, let's see, 2008, 13, even 45, you'd say all he needs to do is win two in his next 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Self's went 0 for 13 now, winning a national championship, and he's had plenty of one-seeds and teams to do it, and in fairness, one was ripped away last year with COVID. We'll never know on that, but he had plenty of other opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's going to keep people saying Bill Self's not as good as Roy or Coach K or whoever. Even if Bill Self wins a lot more games, even if Bill Self becomes the all-time winningest coach in college basketball, okay, and exceeds Coach K. Let's say Coach K retires next year or two. And Bill coaches till he's 75. And if Bill has two national championships and he has 1,400 wins, people are going to still say Coach K was better. They might even say Roy Williams is still better. But if Bill can get the three, if Bill Self can get the three, then I think you're right there. You got to get the three. You know, we talk about, well, how many titles of LeBron got to get to compare to Jordan? Well, it depends on what you think. But as I said, one title, for as good a coach as Bill Self is, one national championship, it's kind of like Peyton Manning, you know, not winning a title all those years. Like, he's too good not to have a title, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is too good to only have one Super Bowl appearance and one championship. He is. He's too good. But that's exactly what's happened. And I'll say that he'll end up with only one. Whereas Bill Self still has some time. But the last 13 years, Kansas has been to the Final Four twice, right? Twice. 2012, lost the national title game. 2018, lost to Villanova in the Final Four. So since they won the national championship in 08, Bill Self's been to two Final Fours in 13 years. That sounds good for a normal program. But that's not nearly as good as Roy Williams at North Carolina or Coach K at Duke.
Mm-hmm.
But he wins all the conference titles. He's got the great winning percentage. And I'm not trying to be critical of Bill Self. I'm just presenting the numbers and the facts. Bill Self has 12 years to get two national championships, to have as many titles as Roy at his same age. Now, the wild card that could be, Bill Self could coach Kansas till he's 81. And now he's got 23 years to get two more titles to get to mm-hmm. Roy. But you still could argue, it took you a lot more years to get to your three titles as it did Roy Williams. Because remember, Roy started later, as I said, as a head coach at his age, because he was assistant for 10 years under Dean Smith. Bill Self was not an assistant for 10 years under anybody.
No.
So just keep all that in mind. And the bottom line is, you can say whoever your favorite coach is, and you're not wrong. You have a right to say who your favorite coach is, whether they win titles or not. You can say LeBron's the greatest player, even though he doesn't have as many titles as Jordan. You can say that Bill Russell's the greatest player, even though Russell has almost twice as many as Jordan. You have the right to argue any of that stuff. But when you look at numbers, you eventually say, what's the ultimate way of judging a coach based on history and reflection? And that is winning. Well, there's different levels of winning. There's conference championships, there's winning percentage, there's all-time wins, and then the ultimate judge in winning in college basketball is Final Fours, and then the very top of the rung of the ladder is national championships. And Bill Self is still lacking in that area, only because, and this sounds weird, but it is really a backhanded compliment to Bill Self. It's because he's been so dang good, winning so many times and having so many great seeds in the tournament. That's why it's disappointing he only has one.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Bill Self was a coach that was like Bruce Weber, and he had two good years, and then they fell off, and he reboots, and then he gets really good, and they go far, and then they fall off, you wouldn't sit here and say, well, you know, Bill's probably done about as good as he could. He got his one title. He's been the three Final Fours. You'd probably say, oh, that makes sense. You know, he missed the tournament some. But not with the record Bill Self has. Four seed or better every year for 18 years, and you have only three Final Fours and one championship, that's a knock on Bill Self.
Mm-hmm.
And until Bill Self gets better in the tournament over the course of his life-term deal, that still will be a fair criticism in regards to judging the history of who the best coaches are. Everybody knows he's a Hall of Famer already.
Oh, yeah.
He's already one of the greatest coaches. But if you want to beat an extreme elite company, you've got to probably win at least two, if not three, national championships. That's something Roy Williams has done. Something that Chris Beard and Bill Self are chasing.
Yeah, he's literally a Hall of Famer already. He's
I know.
Hall of
I know
Famer.
He is. Yeah, so that's why he's called him a Hall of Famer.
About that part of it.
Oh, he's a Hall of Famer already.
Yeah.
I mean, but when you win 82% of your games and you have all the seeds you have and all the ones and twos and never have a down year or 8, 9, or 10 or miss the tournament,
yeah.
I mean, three Final Fours in 18 years with only one national title, considering all the great seeds and favorable matchups they had, is honestly underachieving.
Mm-hmm.
In fairness, it is. We'd say the same thing about Coach K. We'd say the same thing about Roy Williams. We'd say the same thing about Chris Baird, John Calipari. We'd say the same thing.
I mean, it's
Tom Izzo.
Eight Final Fours and one championship.
Right.
When I was looking at all that, I would see Tom Izzo on there, and it's like, man, he's only won one title.
Right, right. But he's been to more Final Fours. He's been to eight, and Bill's been to three.
Yeah.
Okay? And John Calipari has been criticized. He only has one national championship.
Mm-hmm.
He's still being criticized for that. He's kind of in the same boat that Bill Self is. You recruit good talent, you win all these games, you win your conference, and then you can't win at all. They at least got one, so they at least got that in their back pocket. They can't say they're going to be skunked. But really, honestly, that's probably what drives Self and Calipari, is I want to get another one.
Yeah.
One or more.
I hope it does. Yeah.
Right. You would hope so. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what Texas Tech does with their coaching situation, because Tech was really, honestly, becoming them and Baylor, the top challengers to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, has Texas suddenly replaced Texas Tech as that big challenger to Baylor and Kansas? And does Kansas not really be the ultimate championship contender until they get through this whole investigation and then the clouds disperse, and then you know Bill's there for the rest of his life if he wants to be, and then they start getting better recruits than they've had the last couple of years, and then all of a sudden things turn, and now Bill Self has a much better chance of winning national championships.
Yeah.
The team he had this year had no chance of winning a national championship, in my opinion.
Oh, no.
Even though they still somehow got a three seed. That tells you how great of a coach Bill Self is. So if people are listening, I hope you understand. I'm not saying Bill Self's not a good coach. Uh-uh. In fact, I said earlier, I think he's better than Roy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
If you give Bill Self versus Roy Williams straight up the same players, I would pick Bill Self to win that game. But when it comes to what has happened in their careers, the ultimate judge of the greatest of all time is judged on one number, and pretty much one number only, and that's championships. And that's something that Roy Williams is plus two on Bill Self. And you can make excuses for Bill Self. You can say, well, it's easier to recruit to Chapel Hill than Lawrence. I mean, you can make all the excuses you want. But Bill Self won all these games and had better seeds in the tournaments, a lot more than Roy Williams has at North Carolina. And he hasn't done as much as North Carolina has with Roy Williams as their head coach to win championships.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also been to more Final Fours at North Carolina during his time than Bill Self has at Kansas. Those are all fair things to point out. So Bill Self's a great coach, no doubt about it. But he can move up the ladder. And he still has time. He's 58. But he has not won a title in 13 years. And maybe, you know, Dean Smith took forever to win a title. And it took Roy a long time to win a title. And then Roy won, once he won a title, he won a few more fairly soon after that. With Bill, that has not happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Calipari won his first one in 2012. He's now gone 9 years without one. So he's kind of in the same conversation. So it'd be interesting to see how it's all played out in regards to where are these guys in their careers as a head coach at Bill Self. Will he be at the end of his career? He'll probably have more wins than Roy Williams. I don't know if he'll have more Final Four appearances. I don't know if he'll have as many or more national championships. And maybe it's pure luck. Maybe it's Bill Self's unlucky when he gets in the tournament. It has nothing to do with anything else. Maybe he's just purely unlucky. I don't know. It does seem like whenever they lose in tournaments, teams that go nuts from three-point land. Or maybe it's three-point defense is the problem all these years. You can make any argument you want. But Kansas has a guy locked up now for life as long as nothing crazy happens.
Yep.
So good for Bill Self. So in the last 24 hours, Roy Williams has retired at the North Carolina, unexpectedly to most. Chris Beard leaves Texas Tech, and their AD is ticked off, along with their administration, and goes home, like Roy did 18 years ago. Beard goes to Texas. And then the following day, in the same 24-hour period, oddly enough, Texas Tech's upset that Chris Beard doesn't sign a lifetime rolling contract. The very next day, Bill Self does at Kansas.
Yes.
But in fairness to Texas Tech, dream job was still out there for Chris Beard. For Bill Self, it looks like his dream job is where he's at.
Yes.
So why would you leave it?
You don't.
And I want to know how much money he's going to bank now. It's going to be a lot, won't it?
I saw something. I didn't see the whole breakdown, but it's like it's at least $3 million a year.
Well, so. He's already making three a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't be any less be over than that, obviously.
Well, obviously. So, I would think it'd be up to four a year. I don't know what his contract is now and how much he makes. I'm very interested to check that out. There you go. Bill Self salary. I'll pull it up here. Oh, holy shnikes. Is that right? I was way off. Well, wait a minute here. It says his annual salary, according to this, is $7.15 million.
I've seen something like that before, too, but I don't think that's accurate.
I don't think that's accurate either.
That's like his, with everything that he does, I think.
The added benefits and everything else.
Other stuff in that. Because it's like $3 million something on the regular, what he gets paid.
I'm trying to find out where he has the contract. Oh, goodness. I'd like to figure that out before we sign off here. Bill Self's the highest paid coach in the Big 12. Bob Huggins the highest paid. I guess he's the next highest paid in the Big 12, it looks like, although Chris Beard might go right there. You know, Scott Drew obviously is going to get a raise after what he's done this year, I would imagine. He'll probably get an he'll be ready to be the next guy to get an extension. Okay. According to this I found, Bill Self is the 15th highest paid coach based on scheduled school pay. His school pay is $3.8 million. The actual school pay is $3.6 million. So his total pay is $3.66. The school buyout as of yesterday to buy out Bill Self. So if you want to go get Bill Self to be your next head coach, it'll cost you $13.7 million. Mm-hmm. Whereas Texas only had to pay $5 million or $4 million to get Chris Beard. And you say only $4 million, but that's chump change for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I did not realize that buyout was that high. John Calipari's buyout is $54 million. Jaw hits the floor.
Yeah.
$54 million. Fred Hoiberg's buyout at Nebraska is $22 million. And he's not doing anything up there.
Nobody's going to be doing that anytime soon.
Brad Underwood's is $10 million. Another reason why Brad's probably not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But some K-State fans think he somehow will. And Bob Huggins, Tony Bennett's, they're $21 million. Bob Huggins only $3 million, but he's at home. He's got his alma mater, so he probably ain't going nowhere. Yeah. That makes sense if that's lower. You want to hire Mick Cronin, who's in the Final Four right now? $8.75 million buyout. Huh. Interesting. 13.7. That's crazy stuff. So, Bill, yeah, he's going to get more than $3.6 million here with this future contract. I would bet you a lot of money on that. But I don't have nearly as much as Bill. Anything else you want to add?
No.
Holy
shnikes.
I don't
have that kind of money. Never.
Holy shnikes. It pays to be a really good coach. It does. But as we said before, and I think we've seen with Roy stepping away, there's a lot of stresses and things that go with it. And it doesn't mean that you're happy. And I don't think Roy was happy here last year or two coaching basketball. And he stepped away. And he's also stepping away from money, too. He's walking away from the rest of his contract. So kudos to Roy for doing it his way.
state, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.